Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Support WrestleTalk!
Give us a subscribe.
Making their way to the ring at a combined weight of undeniably sexy, hailing from London, the Wrestle Ramble Podcast!
Spiderfest 2019, I am Luca and this is El Fakador Larry Blake, and over there is Chopper Pete Quinnell, who will be manning your chairs and your super chairs. My chair is a little bit hot, just drop down a little bit there. And yeah, we're going to be reviewing AEW's Fighter Fest. This is the first time I've actually been able to do like a full ramble review of an AEW show. For those people who have been asking in the comments, yes, there will be a 10-minute review as well that Ollie does. He's doing it in a sort of a news review format like we do for Raw and SmackDown. It's a bit of a testing ground at the moment because we're not sure what happens sort of 2 days after a show, whether there's any interest in it. So we had this before when we didn't do a review of the Greatest Royal Rumble, which was on a Friday, and then people kept asking us on Saturday, Sunday, where's the review? And then we did one on Monday, and I was like, it's too late now.
I think people barely cared about the Greatest
Royal Rumble. Well, exactly.
Quite. That was the Greatest Royal Rumble spot. I'm sticking with it.
So they were in a bit of a testing ground at the moment to sort of see how well this will do two days after the fact. But we do want to talk about the biggest thing from this show, which is the fallout of Wrestle League Series 2. So if you are one of our Patreon pledge hammers, you will be involved in Wrestle League, where you're competing against us in Predictions War. And I thought I'd give you a quick update on the table. So the table currently sees Simon in last place with 43 points.
Useless.
And then it is me with 47. Now, running storyline for this season so far is that I have just been bottom of the league.
Mm-hmm.
Simon doesn't really count. So I'm just bottom of the league. But who's only 1 point behind Pete now?
With dun, dun, dun.
48 points, it's Pete. And then Laurie is on 55. Ollie is on 57. And then some bloke named Randy, 61. Don't know who that
is. How are your pipes, Chopper?
I'm furious at what's happening. This is way too close, and I hate it.
Yeah.
I really don't want to do music punishment, because I don't know how it's going to go, and it's going to be terrible. Ollie can make it work. Ollie's entertaining. I'm not. So it'll be really... You don't want it. You don't want to see me do a music punishment. Promise.
Pete, it's not up to them. It's up to
I
you
know.
To do better.
Well,
you do
I know.
Better. Do better,
unless
mate.
We can convince all of Impact to take a dive.
Cool.
Let's talk about the topic at hand. Let's talk about this chair shot from Sean Spears to Cody after his match with Darby Allin. And the big question, did this controversial moment ruin the pay-per-view? Because...
Mm.
I'll ask you first, then I'll say my bit on this.
I would say no. I just think it's the easiest thing to latch onto in terms of things to talk about in social media. And I think it is an important point that you don't really want to be hitting people in the head with chairs or even make that a... even if the chair's gimmicked, even whatever. Like, this is the proof that it can go wrong even if you try to do it as safely as possible.
Yeah.
So it's probably... better not to hit people with unprotected chair shots, as cool as they are, in like a visually, they carry even more weight now than they did previously, I think, because of all the concussion stuff that's come out of it. So like, I get kind of what you're going for here. You want to make it a brutal assault, and you want to make it even further, like it's outlandishly violent. But yeah, this is just sort of the fallout of this is the proof that maybe it's not a good idea. One, for Cody's suits and the ring mat and all that stuff, but also just for the purposes of, like, it has dominated the narrative around Fighter Fest.
That's exactly it. Yeah, I think when I tend to sort of like judge the feelings of a show, mm-hmm. and sort of like the interest in a show based on the social media interaction I get the day after.
Yeah.
So if I wake up, like, usually when I wake up after Raw, I have a lot of people who get in touch with me with their thoughts about mm-hmm. Raw. SmackDown, not as many. And then NXT, barely anyone. Yeah. There are times when I've woken up the morning after NXT and no one has sent me anything.
Yeah. Barely happened.
And WWE pay-per-views actually run a sort of similar gamut. Usually it's around sort of like the Raw SmackDown levels. Not quite Raw sometimes. But Fyter Fest, I would say, is probably around the sort of SmackDown level of engagement, of people getting back, you know, saying, here mm-hmm. is what I think, here is what I think. But this is all anyone wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
Was that this moment ruined the show for them, that and the pre-show did. So, but we'll come on to the pre-show, which mm-hmm. actually I quite liked. For me, it certainly didn't ruin the show.
No.
It certainly didn't ruin... I don't think it was the best thing to do on your second show, because
no.
there has been a lot of sort of negative feedback towards it. I don't think there are that many people who are sitting there going like, well, that was the best thing this company could have done at this point.
Yeah. Well, I think that it's almost could be confusing that in the last Cody Rhodes match, it ended with two profusely bleeding men hugging out in the ring, and they were like, well, maybe
I think that was just all Dustin's blood,
yeah.
just on Cody.
But like, yeah, but that's what, yeah, but it seems like that sort of like that was kind of quite a grisly, heartwarming in the space of being very grisly finale. And they were like, well, maybe it needs to have some sort of brutality in it to really drive it home, and that's what gives you the extra stars that you get for the match rating. But this, I think this was just too far, and I think also there were just some mistakes they're making, AEW, in terms of some of these bits of booking that I think they need to have a higher level of clarity to what the product is. Because I've seen clips of Tony Khan being like interviewed after the show and people saying to him, like, is this what you're going to be showing on TNT? And he's going like, no, this was, you know, it's not even really a pay-per-view. It's just a streaming event thing. And we went for this thing. The actual product won't be that. But these two, like, this is the second show you've done. It is time to set out your stall and go, this is what we are. This is what the kind of content is. But if you're not going to do unsanctioned death matches with Jon Moxley and Joey Janela, and you're not going to do unprotected headshots, and you're not going to do weird kickoff show things, maybe don't do it now.
Do it now. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like do what you're going to do for TNT now. Get that over, because by the time a TNT show comes around, it's going to feel very tame comparative to that.
Yeah, that's a very good point, really. And it was a... I feel very uncomfortable with unprotected chair shots mm-hmm. in 2019. I mean, to be honest, it's been very funny where we've been doing Wrestle Ramble Extra, mm-hmm. which is it's a Patreon podcast that we do for our Pledge Hammers, where Ollie and I and Pete and the last one review old pay-per-views. Mm-hmm. And we have done some pay-per-views where there have been these brutally harsh unprotected chair shots. Yeah. And at the time, you're like, when you look at sort of like a 99, 2000 pay-per-view, you're like, nah, that's just what we did then. Like, it's just, you know, yeah, at the time, that was just seen as, that was the thing to be done.
Yeah.
But in a post-Benoit world.
Yeah.
With everything that we now know about CTE and whatnot, and I just don't think it's the smartest thing to do when you are, when you're already arguably the second biggest company on the planet, because, mm-hmm. well, especially when you start TV in October, to be doing these sort of unprotected chair shots and just drawing this negative press onto your show.
Yeah.
And, you know, Khan and the Bucks and everyone have said, well, I mean, Cody's idea is what Nick Jackson said, and he said that he was under the impression that the chair was gimmicked, and Tony Khan said the chair was supposed to be gimmicked, but it's a case of you can make the best plane in the world, but if you have a bad pilot, then the plane is going to crash.
Yeah, so what they said was that it was something to do with the pins. They'd loosened the pins in the chair so that when it was meant to be the seat that collided with Cody's head, and then that would snap back,
So he'd be wearing the chair.
Basically stopping a lot of the force. And he'd be wearing the chair, but it sort of went in, and he got clipped with the back of it, and that's what sort of wrenched open the back of his head.
Oof.
So he basically got can opened.
Yeah, I was going to say, it was gruesome.
Yeah.
And like, it was, as soon as he hit the deck, and they panned down to him, blood's just started, like, pouring
And he
out
looked
of his
out
head.
Of it. Like, I know they said afterwards he didn't have a concussion, he didn't whatever. He was dazed AF after that.
Like, housemate Simon made the point when we were talking about this earlier. Where he said that, you know, All Elite Wrestling have said he didn't get a concussion, just had 12 staples. That's what we have learned about CTE over the last 10 years, you know, since the Benoit tragedies, said Benoit murder suicide, let's call it what it is. Mm-hmm. The Benoit murder suicide is that even with CTE, if you don't have a concussion, you still did get a concussion. You still got like the effects of a concussion. You just didn't get a registered concussion.
Yeah.
So there always is something there.
Yeah.
So it's for me, as I say, like, you know, I've seen a few people already, like, before the stream start, going like snowflake, can't handle this, snowflakes. It's got nothing to do with that. It didn't ruin the show for me whatsoever.
No,
I actually
no.
thought this was a great show. Absolutely yeah. great show. And you know, actually, in some ways, I actually preferred it to Double or Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was a really, really, really great show. But this is a moment that I don't want to be talking about.
Yeah.
I don't want to be sat. What I want to be sat here is I want to be sat here talking about how amazing the show is, not having to talk about moments like this, which actually overshadow the whole thing.
Well, I think it was such a shocking moment that, like, considering that people obviously, even in people in the production, knew that it was going to happen. Like, they knew the chair was meant to be gimmicked or whatever. And the shock that registered when people realised that Cody's bleeding profusely from the back of his head did take away the normal atmosphere of, like, when you get these big moments where someone turns on their friend and the commentators spend their time putting it over and really hyping it up and being really shocked, like, fake shocked, obviously, mm-hmm. like, screaming and shouting and that kind of thing. This turned into actual shock, which is when people go very quiet and don't really know what to say and they don't really know what to do. So it turned into everyone being very concerned. And that's actually quite an uncomfortable atmosphere to watch, as it is to sort of experience.
Yeah.
Like, I prefer a big, like, John Moxley style run, like, run in, people are popping, people are going crazy, and everyone's kind of in shock and awe that it's happening. But it's that kind of, like, elated shock. And it's like, oh my God, I can't believe this is happening. This was like, oh my God, I can't. Oh, I feel really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's, the death match that they did in the main event, the unsanctioned mm-hmm. match between Janela and Moxley, well, though it was like, you know, brutal, that had like barbed wire boards and it had, you know, this, that, and yeah, that had plunder and hither and yonder and thumbtacks and everything. But all of it actually seemed so much more tame than this one chair shot.
Well, it was, yeah, that was like as safe as you could make it.
Yeah.
And, like, the safe
and that's a good way to do it.
And the worst thing you're ever going to get is ripped up, like, you're going to get ripped up bits of skin. And that is kind of the deal with barbed wire and all that kind of stuff. But it's not a huge chunk out of your brain.
Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly.
Which you need.
Yeah. That's it, yeah. And I think the people that are saying that, you're just being snowflakes, this and the other, I think you really do have to remember that Benoit period.
Yeah.
In that murder-suicide period, with dark, dark times for wrestling, that's pure dark timeline stuff, where they would come out and he had the brain of a seven-year-old by the time of...
Mm.
Like, that's bonkers.
Yeah.
Like, and so... Really, we shouldn't. It shouldn't even be a discussion at this point.
No.
So I'm a bit.
It's not worth it for a moment, is it?
It like, really isn't. Yeah. So I mean, just put your hand.
Also,
up.
I like Cody.
Love Cody.
I don't want him to stop wrestling because he's been bonked in the head
too many
times.
Absolutely. Yeah. For me, and I can't remember if he has got a match at Fight for the Fallen, hasn't he? He's got the tag match with Dustin. For me, I would try to be riding this wave and just saying that he's got to be off the show. And just, if you want to really put this over and turn it into something of a storyline and the other, take him off of Fight for the Fallen.
Yeah.
Take him off of All Out. Take him off into everything until the TV show starts.
Yeah.
And say, like, Sean Spears cost him 2 pay-per-views,
yeah.
and he's got to wait till TV now.
Well, you should do it in a very, if you're going to do this, do it in a very, like, never again kind of way.
And yeah.
It should have been a moment, but it should have also had some build. Like, if this is what was going to happen, and it was going to be this big shock horror thing, build to it.
Yeah.
And then make it a really punctuating point. It was a throwaway spot that didn't land in the way that I think they wanted it to. And it has dominated a lot of the conversation.
It's unfortunate.
For a pay-per-view that was, to all intents and purposes, really, really freaking good.
Oh, so good.
And I really, really enjoyed watching it.
Yeah.
And, like, yeah, it's a shame that this is the only, like, this one collision is the only thing that's being talked about out of 3 hours of amazing wrestling.
Absolutely, yeah. But it came off the back of a really good match as well, mm-hmm. actually, which was Cody versus Darby Allin. Darby Allin, who you and I saw at Progress, mm-hmm. Super Strong Style. And he's really, really cool, very unique as a wrestler. And that's what I really like about Darby Allin. There's not many people that are like him. He's got a very distinctive look about him. He's got a very distinctive style of wrestling.
sometimes he comes down to the ring on a skateboard and like does sort of like, you know, a kickflip or whatever, you know, and what the kids do with scooters and whatnot.
An Ollie,
exactly, an Ollie Davis. And he brings out a body bag with Cody's name on it. Mm-hmm. It says 1-1 because that's what Cody's record is going to be after this match, at least in Darby's eyes. And I thought the commentary did a really good job of getting over Darby Allin's character to a new audience.
Yeah.
To an audience who might be watching, not AEW, perhaps not for the first time, but it might be the first time they've seen Darby Allin. And so the commentary were doing everything they could to get over, this is who this guy is, this is why he's like this, this is why he does this.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually give a lot of credit to the commentary for this.
Yeah, I thought it was really fantastic. They were saying that like he'd been in a car crash when he was younger, and he was like quite traumatized from that.
Maybe he essentially give up on life.
Yeah, but then he went into like all these, but then he found the sort of purpose of like going and getting what you wanted, and he wanted to be a pro skater, so then he went and became a pro skater. He wanted to be a pro wrestler, so he went and became a pro wrestler. And it's that kind of like never say die attitude, but plus a complete recklessness.
Yes.
That he exhibited in the match perfectly, I think.
Yeah.
It was that, you know, like they said that I thought it was quite a throwaway line that I quite liked, and I think the rest of the commentary team actually crapped on it a bit, but like he said, I think it was Golden Boy that said it, or Excalibur, they said like, you know, he wanted to be a pro skater, but you've got to be an amateur skater first, and you spend most of your time falling off.
Yeah.
And it hurts, and it's terrible, and you've got to pick yourself back up and do it again. And I really like that as like you know, the sort of image of this is like, this was his trial and error sort of phase of like, he just kept getting up in this match.
Yeah. He really did.
To the point where he dragged a draw out.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. It was a really, really good story. Actually, on the commentary, I thought Golden Boy was really good.
Yeah, I really liked him.
I really liked him. I thought him and Excalibur worked very, very well together. The commentary was actually a bit of a sort of a sticking point on the first show, I think, for some people.
I liked the first show's commentary.
Yeah, for JR, for me, I thought JR was actually quite good at Double or Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
But here, at times, JR was slipping into his curmudgeon-y JR ways, which he has been for the last couple of years, which is where if he doesn't like it, he just sits there and will essentially tell you, I don't like this.
Yeah.
There's a moment during the six man where he's like, who's the legal man? Does anyone care? I'm like, Jim, stop burying your own product, mate. There were, Justin Roberts,
you're an actor.
Justin Roberts announced Hangman Page as weighing 295 pounds, and JR was like, bollocks. No, he's not. He's no way he's 295. What a load of crap. Like, mate, it's not real.
Yeah.
You can announce him as 500 pounds if you want to, because guess what? It's not real.
Do you remember in an era where he was putting over the Hollies as super heavyweights?
So Darby Allin looked really cool in this, but the whole story of this match was, as you say, this was Darby Allin refuses to die.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Cody doing his darndest to make sure this kid is going to stay down. And it was, like, there's a spot towards the start where he throws him into the corner, and Darby essentially just like flings himself in between the ropes, collides with the ring post, and falls to the outside.
Yeah, he just does a sort of like, he somehow does a 619 to himself, and that's it. Like, just, so, all right, fine.
It was so weird. But the
JR, I think JR said at that point, it's like Darby Allin broke his fall. That was a really good bit of commentary.
But he actually starts targeting Cody's hand. Like, Darby Allin manages to just get like one little thing, and he smelt one tiny bit of blood, and that was how he fell. Mm-hmm. That's how, you know, he's trying to make his little comeback. And it was like Cody had him in a delayed suplex, so Darby Allin just grabbed the hand. And grabbing the hand.
Wrenches it open.
Yeah, wrenches it open.
Such a cool idea.
And forces Cody to put him down. But it builds to this moment where you've sort of got 5 minutes left, and because they actually had their time limits on this show. They announced ahead of time, you know, 20-minute time limits. And it was, you had Justin Roberts say, 5 minutes of this match remain. And Darby bites Cody's hand. And then Cody is laying on the apron. So Darby Allin climbs up, and he does a coffin drop where he just essentially puts his arms over his chest and just launches himself backwards. A bit like Kofi's trust fall, if you haven't seen the show. And he just sort of throws himself off the like middle rope, or the top rope, in fact, and Cody moves out of the way. So this lad just lands hard on his back on the ring apron and falls to the floor.
Oh, it's not nice.
Oof, mate.
It's bracing stuff.
Oh, it really is. That's the sort
of airs on your chest.
It's the sort of spot where you go, you won't be doing that in 10 years, mate.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Get it in now while you can, I guess. You won't be doing that in 10 years,
mate. I'll be walking in 10 years, mate.
Cody hit a bicycle kick, which I think Golden Boy called it a bicycle kick.
A bicycle.
Just got a bit of a pop out of me. It might have been Excalibur, but it was very good. And then this is the only bit of the match I didn't really like, which was where Cody put Darby into the body bag and hit the disaster kick and then had to get him out of the body bag to pin him. I'm like, that probably wasn't much needed. It was a way to, it's a way to protect the disaster kickers because then Darby kicked out at two.
Yeah.
I don't think it added that much to it.
It didn't make any sense at all. Because it was like, it was more of a fun, like, because they were like, how do you know when the shoulders are down? Then Cody has to fish him out and then pin him. And it's like, well, you've wasted all the time where you could have been pinning him.
Exactly.
And then, oh, lo and behold, you run out by 1 second.
And it would have been more effective continuing this Darby Allin won't give up storyline.
Yeah.
If Darby Allin kicked out after two from the disaster kick.
I think if you were going to put him in, if you were going to put him into the body bag, you should have done like a longer section, put him in, zip him up, put him in the corner and beat the crap out of him.
Mm.
And do that for like a good couple of minutes and literally have him fall out standing of this body bag and then do a finisher and then pin him and then he kicks out.
Yeah.
Because this just felt like it was fumbly. It didn't look very good because he couldn't react to the disaster kick until he just sort of was like, that with me yet? Oh, it's sort of with me. I'll fall down now. Like, it all didn't quite gel in the way you wanted it to.
Yeah, it didn't quite work.
It was a cool visual metaphor.
Yeah, it was.
But it should have been more. I mean, even you could have done, like, beating him up in the body bag and he rockets out of it. Like, that would be a cool sort of, like, you know, he's coming back from the dead almost.
Absolutely, yeah. But he does make a bit of a comeback. It's like a flipping stunner, but then gets hit by Crossroads by Cody, and Cody like struggles to get into the pin. Time expires, and he's like, "Ah, time limit draw." It's really smart because Cody got the win at Double or Nothing. Doesn't lose anything here. He actually looked really strong in that, which then keeps him strong going into the tag match at Fight for the Fall. And if they are gonna stick ahead doing that, if it was me, I'd probably look to save that match and do it another time.
Yeah, because it's proven now that both Cody and his brother are bleeders. They're just bleeders.
Absolutely, yeah. So it keeps him strong going into that match, which actually I think is kind of the story of this whole show, was putting over the people that have got big matches at the next show. Which actually, it's very, very smart and effective booking, really, because it makes everyone look good. And that's then when we got the spot at the end. Cody's there asking for 5 more minutes, and then Sean Spears comes out, hits him with this chair shot. Cody falls down like a sack of spuds, and then crowd go very, very hushed. And and then you had MGF running down, looked very upset. SCU came down, and JR said that that Cody has got the Rhodes genes, which can be a blessing and a curse.
Mm.
Which I thought actually was a very, very good line from JR. So I really enjoyed the match, with the exception of the body bag spot. Really, really liked the match.
Yeah, I think Darby Allin's,
and I loved the finish.
Like, it put over Darby Allin well, and I think he came across like a star in the making. He's incredible.
Yeah.
I loved his, he did there's a little flurry he does in the middle of the match where he was just doing all these little dive rolls to like link all of his moves together, and it just looked so awesome so specifically that guy. You know what I mean? It's that sort of thing. Is like, oh, he's worked out a way to be like, I do my offense this way, and this is the way that I'm the only person who does it like this. I've never really seen anyone move exactly like Darby Allin.
Yeah.
And I just think that's a really cool kind of reckless gimmick thing to have.
And that's the other shame, I suppose, about the chair shot, just to bring it back full circle to the start of this conversation, is that everyone's just talking about the chair shot now. No one's talking about how good Darby Allin was in the match, because once again the chair shot and the Sean Spears stuff has kind of overshadowed the match itself.
Yeah.
Which, again, it's a bit of a shame, really.
Well, you could have done that. I get they were sort of looking for, like, the time limit finish is very, the time limit draw is a very good idea to keep both guys kind of protected. Because you want to push you're going to want to push Darby Allin at some point. You're not going to just have him eat a loss to Cody. Although he would have lost nothing losing to Cody, even like in the last 10 seconds.
Yeah.
But you want to keep Cody going over. But just, why didn't Cody just flip the switch and hit Darby? Or like, just something to just, you needed, they were looking for a punctuation point and they chose the wrong one.
Mm.
And I think you could have just done something else at the end here to have one of the guys go too far. Maybe Darby gets up and does something horrible while Cody's asking for 5 more minutes, and then it just walks out. There was many other things you could have done that didn't have to be quite like this.
I was going to say, because I'm guessing this is all building to Cody versus Sean Spears at All Out.
Yeah,
probably in a chairs match.
Anyway, I'm hoping it's chairs and helmets.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Let's go over to producer Pete for the day. What are people saying in the super chats?
Well, people are very opinionated today. Boy howdy, have opinions.
Good, that's what I like to hear.
Yes, some of them are nice about it.
Okay.
Only some of them. Anyway, let's go on to the super chats. Tim Arndt, coming in with a donation saying, my favourite part of the pay-per-view was a guy yelling at the librarians, it's not even a real book!
Well, I'm glad that someone enjoyed something about the librarians.
I kind of enjoyed the librarians.
It's the one thing of the pre-show I didn't enjoy. Oh, we'll go to bat for Nakazawa Jabali. I loved that match, I thought it was hilarious.
I actually thought it was alright.
Yeah.
Jobber JJ comes in and says, do you think WWE will go one better and Seth will hit Lacey with a chair?
I mean, that was the whole reason that, what's his name? Baron Corbin. That's why he picked it, didn't he? It's because then Seth can't hit her with a chair.
Mm.
Actually, smart thinking by Baron, really, when you think about it.
Unless Seth turns heel.
Unless Seth
and
turns heel.
And he's a lady.
What? If you'd have done that in 2000, it would have been the biggest babyface on the planet. Austin was trying to do that to get heel heat in 2001.
And everyone's like,
hitting
yes!
Lita. He's like hitting Lita with a chair, and everyone's going like, go on, Austin, hit her again, mate.
Put her in her place!
Joe JJ comes in again, saying, hi, boys, even though you already did one before. Chair shot stupid, but I did pop.
Hmm, okay, that's interesting. That's an opinion I've not heard, actually, which is that I thought it was stupid, but I did pop for it. So, yeah.
I thought it was, I sort of thought, that's kind of how I think the longer I think about it, the more I dislike it. But at the moment, I was like, whoa, that's pretty, like, I felt all the sort of feelings of, like, that's cool and the thing that happened, and then you have to go like, well, actually it did this and this and this and this, and there's the thing is, like, I think why they keep happening even now is because they are cool.
it's
hard to deny they are cool.
Yeah, I think there's a better way to do it. Pete,
Danny W, no message but a donation nonetheless,
thank you very much.
Justin Borley comes in and says, hey guys, just wanted to let you know you all do a fantastic job, keep up the good work. Who would be the dream debut for Bray Wyatt?
Roman Reigns, and he destroys him.
Yeah, go with Roman.
I don't really know, whatever Bray Wyatt's debut is, it should just be dominant, finally, and terrifying. And I think that should be this, you know, I don't even think it should be a long match. It should just be a really quick squash debut.
In which case, then I'd target Heath Slater.
Yeah,
because you can just kill Heath and it doesn't matter.
Also, I want him to kill someone big and position him immediately as like, this is a guy to watch now. Like, this is, you know, or does Bray do the turn midway through the match and he comes down as like cuddly Firefly Funhouse Bray and then turns into the Fiend.
To be honest, because I've just finished watching an AEW show, that's all I really want to talk about at the moment, so I don't really want to talk about Bray. But come Raw, I'll be back onto the Bray train.
On the Bray train.
Yeah. Bravey train.
Danny Milhouse says, thoughts on the Rascals on Impact, Bright Futures.
I hate this. I think that is the dumbest taunt that a wrestler has in 2019. It's so childish. It made instantly, when they started doing this, I'm like, I hate these lads. Yeah. You could do all your big flips and whatnot, but I think you're
Some of the flips they did, the moonsault shove one.
That's a great.
That is unbelievable.
So good, but this needs to go.
Brian Nowak and Jeremy Chastain just come in with super chats, no messages.
Thank you very much.
And then Adam comes in and says, Dark Order come out slower than Taker. Lame gimmick.
It was, it was super slow. I was watching that on 1.5 speed to get through the pre-show because I'd heard it was bad. And then, even with that, it took ages for them to get to the ring.
Yeah, they were there for quite some time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Big guys, though.
Well, it's just their minions are tiny, aren't they?
You don't want to wear masks in the dark.
It didn't quite.
Maybe those weren't the crowd's lights. Maybe those were just ushers going like, "It's over there." The ring is there.
It's two things they've done now for Dark Order, and they haven't quite worked on both occasions because the first time they showed up, and everyone was like, "Who are these lads?"
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like
they used to be Super Smash Bros, right?
Super Smash Bros, yeah. And then this one didn't come off quite that well either. Mm. The other bit of the pre-show I wasn't keen on.
Jeremy Chastain comes in again with another super chat, no message.
Thank you, gracias.
And we'll just do two more.
Yes, please.
Will Adams says Ollie Davis appears from out of nowhere.
Yes, he did. There's
a moment. And then
what a moment.
Dustin S. Gooding comes in and says, heart emoji, Russell Talk, hashtag karaoke Pete. Please stop it. Don't do that to me.
I like that. We'll do karaoke with a C so we can place Chopper with it. We'll just call you Karaoke Pete instead.
No, that's perfect. We'll do the rest of your super chats later on, but I think it's back to you guys for the rest of the show.
Thank you very much, Pete. So yeah, we'll talk about this kickoff show then. So I only saw Fyter Fest today because I was away over the weekend. I went to my parents, then went to my wife's nan's, which was lovely. I went for a nice meal. But so I didn't see this until today. So I actually had like a good 24 hours of people telling me the pre-show's awful.
Yeah, the pre-show's
dreadful. I think even Meltzer said like, thank God that pre-show is over. He's calling it bad. And that's all anyone ever said to me, was just it was bad. So I actually went into this pre-show with fairly low expectations.
Yeah.
But came out going like, that was all right.
It was fine. My issue with pre-shows is, one, why are you doing them? Two, if you're going to do them, and I think the key with AEW's branding of it is the issue. They call their pre-shows a buy-in for, like, you get this for free, and it's to make you want to watch the pay-per-view. And they keep doing stuff in the pre-show that's nothing like in the pay-per-view that makes me not want to really watch the pay-per-view. Nothing I've saw in the pre-show of this was, like, apart from the tag match, but, like, I just think at some point you've got to think with kickoff shows and pre-shows, if you're trying to do it to make people buy your pay-per-view, show one of your big stars in it. Like, do something like, I'm not saying Kenny Omega, but maybe like, I don't know, Adam Page was in the Battle Royal in the kickoff show for Double or Nothing. But that's not, he wasn't listed
that
as
that. That was circumstances.
So, yeah, that was circumstances and he wasn't listed to do that. So, like, at some point you've got to put someone big on the pre-show and have, like, the New Day 5-star Usos pre-show match to make people go like, whoa, this is worth buying, like spending money on and buying. Because nothing here was enough for me to go like, I actually really want to see this.
I think
apart from the fact
that
you know that you're going to see Kenny Omega and the Elite.
That's the key to it, really, is that there were... What I liked about the pre-show, what I will put over, is that it was an hour long and it had three matches. There was no wasted time.
No, there wasn't waffle.
It wasn't waffle, except for like the minions getting in and around the ring for the Dark Order.
That did take 20 minutes.
And the librarian stuff. So there was a couple of like wasted moments here and there, but for the most part, it was in-ring action. Mm-hmm. problem was it wasn't the best in-ring action that they could, like, because you had a comedy celebrity match, you had the women's match, which was really hurt by the librarian stuff, and a really, really fun three-way tag match.
And a bunch of faux documentary
and
stuff.
And a faux documentary stuff, which is only funny if you've watched all the Fire Festival stuff.
Yeah, and being the Elite for a while.
Yeah, and being the Elite for a while. I suddenly realised, actually, while I was watching this show, that my new tattoo is basically the Fire logo. Which is what I'm going to tell people from now on. But for me, the three-way tag team match was the best thing on this pre-show. It was SCU versus Best Friends versus Private Party. And kind of like in the similar vein to the Darby Allin match, this all felt like it was here to build up Private Party and put them over as a very big act within this tag team division. Mm-hmm. And actually, when you think about it, like, on this show, you got SCU, Private Party, Best Friends, Lucha Brothers, and the Young Bucks. Like, just those five there. That's a very, very good tag team division. Yep. Like, that's an incredible tag team division.
And Cody and Dustin, if
Cody
you're
and Dustin,
them in,
Strong Hearts. You've got actually a lot of these other teams sort of like flying around the periphery, Dark Order, when they get into the ring. So there's a lot of stuff, which I'm going to guess it's probably going to be All Out, I guess. Mm-hmm. Now, that'll take up half the show, is them getting to the ring. And actually, Luchasaurus and Jungle Boy as well got like a little bit of a tandem going on. Really strong tag team division.
Really, which is good.
And I think this Tony Khan, Pete, you might be able to help us out with this because this is while I was away. But Tony Khan was on Austin's podcast talking about how the tag division is going to be sort of like the focus of the first sort of like month or so of TV, right?
Yeah, he was saying that I think I think they're going to do it, if memory serves, they're going to do some sort of tag team tournament to kind of crown that division and kick that off around the time when the TV deal starts, I think is what he said.
Yeah.
Well, it makes sense because that's the best way to get the most people over as well. If you get a singles tournament just physically gets less guys in the ring, shows less people to the audience. So you're better off just like pairing people up. Even if it's just like a dusty classic like Finn Balor and Samoa Joe working together, that kind of vibe.
Yeah.
Then you get more of your guys in this big like important tournament, especially when you have already kind of put yourself in the corner of we've already sort of done the deal for the main championship.
Yeah. I really enjoyed the Fire Festival sort of setup as well. They had like the tents and everything from the festival, and then women in bikinis, which was like ironic objectification. Like, hey, it's all right if you do it ironically. So it's like it's funny because it was funny.
Yeah.
If you know sort of like what the whole thing is parodying. But if you don't, it just had a really WCW vibe about it where it's like, oi lads, oi lads, women bikinis out here, tune by the pay-per-view. But the match itself, I thought it was really fun. I thought Private Party were great. Mark Quinn is very good.
And his glasses never come off.
No. Old Simon Phoenix from Demolition Man. he's great, and Isaiah Cassidy's very good as well. And it was funny really because like I was expecting Private Party to pick up the win because they were putting them over so much on commentary.
Yes, yeah.
But it was the Best Friends that got the win in the end
because they're going on to greater things.
Yes, obviously.
I thought this was another very good example of like just smart booking for like the lesser known quantities to give them enough of the match to make them feel like an important thing, because they put them over, they were saying, you know, these guys are the underdogs, these are the rookies, and they had the Best Friends and SCU basically fighting over who gets to beat on these guys. Like, you know, that was kind of the sell for a lot of the match. And then when Private Party make their incredible comeback involving a copious amount of flips.
Untold amount of flips, yeah.
Just some absolutely ridiculous. There was one bit where they he does a Hurricanrana slingshot into a cutter.
Yeah, it was the leap, and it was a vertical leap Hurricanrana as well. Like, so the guy's up on the top rope, he's on the floor, and he jumps up, delivers this Hurricanrana, and then Cassidy hits the cutter as he's falling down.
It's nuts.
Nutso. But actually giving Best Friends the win makes sense given the angle you started at Double or Nothing and then followed up with here with the Dark Order seemingly targeting them as their first opponents.
Yeah.
So yeah, nice stuff. Very much enjoyed it. It just took them a long time to get up there. And then it's one of those things, it's like when the Shield used to quote-unquote surround the ring. I'm like, there's only three of them, there's four sides to that ring.
Yeah.
You haven't quite surrounded it, have you?
Yeah, but the audience is doing the filling in. They can't break the fourth wall of the ring.
And it was another case where the minions were just on three sides. And it's like, the ring's surrounded. And I'm like, makes it there.
Get off there, jump over the crank, yeah.
Then Leva Bates came out and shushed the crowd, but she gets shushed herself. And Peter Avalon, who's the other librarian, is in one of the tents. The crowd were not into this at all. Really were not into this. And
I don't understand the gimmick
at all. She's a librarian.
I know, but and he's a librarian.
And I get that it's supposed to be rubbish. Because, yeah. So the Young Bucks have picked her. I think it's the Young Bucks picked her and Kenny and Cody picked Peter Avalon. Or it's the other way around. I think the Bucks might have picked Avalon. But so I get, the joke of it.
Yeah.
And I get that it's comedy. And so that's all fine. And it's supposed to be a bad gimmick. But it's like crap gimmick wrestling.
Mm.
Like, I wouldn't put on a show with those actual gimmicks.
No.
Because they actually would be. The whole point is that they're crap. They wouldn't have got over. So this led to a match with Ali in her AEW in-ring debut.
But it wasn't supposed to be Ali, was it? It was meant to be Kylie Rae.
Oh, was that it?
Yeah, so it was originally meant to be Kylie Rae, and they just sort of Ali just came out, and they didn't really say why. I don't know if there was anything announced before the pay-per-view that changed that, but yeah, in our predictions, it was Kylie Rae and Leva Bates.
Ah, well.
So there you are.
Either way, I think I had Kylie Rae down anyway, which gave us the point. Ali sort of gets worked over a little bit, and then the demon part of her personality comes out. Match went so much longer than I thought it would, and then Ali won. So at the end, Avalon gets up onto the apron and tries to throw a book to Bates. But because they're also sort of feuding, even though they're on the same side now, that he almost purposely threw it to Ali, so that Ali could then distract Bates and then hit the BSE for the win.
Yeah, it was a weird match.
Weird match.
I think Ali looked really good, and she was very over. People really liked her.
Yeah, Ali's awesome.
I didn't mind some of the, I didn't mind actually Peter Avalon's, some of his distractions. I liked when he was just reading the book and he just did a little tap to the legs as she went into the ropes. There was a lot little bits like that that there were glimmers of hope in what was a fairly bog standard match.
Yeah, pretty much.
I did like also the Rings of Saturn style submission. Pulling the hair and then shushing her.
Yeah, that was very.
That was actually quite funny, and I didn't mind the opening as well, with the sort of ducking all the clotheslines into shh.
Yeah.
All that stuff was quite fun. It just didn't need a 5-minute bit before it that made it quite boring.
I almost think that it did, though, because you kind of needed to get over the whole shushing thing in the first place for then the spots in the match to make sense. I'm wondering if
I
wonder, given time, let's see how this fares. In front of an all-out crowd.
Mm.
Come August, let's see how it works there, because that would be your most die-hard audience.
Yeah, and you might have
got it over by that point. Something that massively got over with me, however, was a match that I was told was absolutely pantalons, and I thought was really fun. It was
pantalon.
Michael Nakazawa versus Alex Jabaley. So, for the people that don't like this match, it's a celebrity comedy match.
Mm.
It's not going to be Bret Shawn at WrestleMania or Kenny Okada at Dominion. This set out to be one thing, and I think it executed that one thing very well. And I was entertained throughout.
It was actually fairly fun. I think I was sort of down on it, and then Justin Wong hands a fight stick out of the crowd, and I was like, Justin Wong? I love Justin Wong! And then I was into it, so...
Yeah.
I'm basic.
We're both basic for really enjoying this match. But, there were some spots here that I really enjoyed. Excalibur said that we won't see this sort of nepotism when AEW gets on TV.
Yeah.
And, he was saying that I'm expecting this to be a complete train wreck from the outset. But I liked Nakazawa using the baby oil to escape from the hip lock. And then... spraying baby oil onto Jabaley so that when he does a foot stomp, he slips and also does a senton.
Yeah, it's a
lovely stuff.
I want to see how far that goes.
But
be a point where he lubes the entire ramp and slides into the ring.
Yeah,
at some point in AEW's future, I imagine.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Use the arcade stick as you said, and then they did a body slam into the luxury pool that was by ringside, which was just an inflatable with a flamingo thing in there. Nakazawa at one point strangled him with a GameCube controller, which kind of popped me.
He takes his thong off.
Yes. Okay. Well, talk us through this spot.
So he really awkwardly takes a thong off from under his
jock.
Yeah, and then. And then sort of works it into a mandible claw-like thing.
Yeah, like stretches it over his arm.
Gets ducks, gets a big German, and then basically he's trapped in his own thong for a while. And gets put in sort of... they said he was put in his own Kimura, which I thought was great commentary.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then he accidentally hits the referee with a claw. And then Jabali gets the roll-up cradle and the visual pin. And then he rolls him back over with the little jock strap on his face.
The mandible thong.
Yeah, the mandible thong.
And there was also a spot where Jabali took out a bag full of arcade buttons, which I thought was actually a very, very funny visual.
Yeah.
Granted, like later on in the show, you got the thumbtacks, and when they pulled it out, I think it was Excalibur was like, "There won't be fight buttons in there."
Yeah.
I it wasn't as bad as a lot of people made it out.
I think it was knockabout fun.
It was knockabout fun. It didn't make me want to buy a pay per view.
Yeah.
But it was knockabout fun.
Like I said, I think that's the thing. Is that I think if you were gonna have these matches, and this is the sort of rampant nepotism that you get in something where it is, you know, his. He is part of the gaming festival that's going on.
He's the CEO.
So he probably just wanted to have a match. And it feels very like being the elite insider kind of knowledge that this has gone down before. And it's all part of this wider thing. And it's really for the crowd in the arena. But don't make it part of the bit that makes you buy the pay-per-view. I know you didn't have to buy this pay-per-view, but...
If you're in America, if you're in the UK, you did.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah. Like, I know you didn't... In America, you didn't have to buy the pay-per-view. So it's that kind of thing of, like, you do need to make sure that when you do this stuff, you are making it feel like an actual proposition of, like, you're going to get some really good stuff, and it's going to come in this show, but you get to see a snippet of it here. Having the weird librarian, baby oil man, and a really good tag match, but, like... If two of your three things are stupid, people might just go, "Oh, this feels really dumb."
Yeah, no, I agree.
You've got to win over new fans as well. You can't just keep dining out on people who are disaffected with WWE.
Guerrilla Position made this point. James D'Lo was talking about it, how he was watching the buy-in show for Double or Nothing with his wife and I believe he said a friend of his. And there was a spot during that match where Jimmy Havoc stapled. A lit cigarette to Joey Janela.
Yeah.
And his wife was just like, "I'm done. I'm out." And it was just, and he thought to himself, like, well, that's one fan they possibly could have had, because she was enjoying it up until that point.
Yeah.
And she might have enjoyed it after that, but that one thing just really turned her off from it. But then again, you can't please everyone.
No.
Can't please everyone. Well, we got onto the main show, which had a cool opening video package to hype up AEW and Fighter Fest. They announced that, it had been announced previously, but they were really highlighting here that Moxley versus Janela will be unsanctioned.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a lights out, lights up moment. And everyone had been telling Cody not to take on Darby Allin. But we got our first match of the night, which was Christopher Daniels versus Shima, which was a good opener. Shima kicked out of the Angel's wings, and then he hit the Meteora for the win.
Mm-hmm.
Thought it was good stuff, and it made sense for Shima to pick up the win here, because he's facing Kenny Omega at Fight for the Fallen.
He is indeed.
So I thought it was good stuff.
And also they took the OVW team took the pinfall, didn't they, OWE took the pinfall at Double or Nothing, didn't they?
Mm.
So, yeah.
I enjoyed this next match way more, though.
Yes.
This triple threat match.
This was great. I love this.
This triple threat match between Rio, Nyla Rose, and Yuka Sakazaki was awesome.
Mm.
I thought this was absolutely wicked.
Yeah. I think this is the sort of the right way to have done powerhouse female booking. Like... In a way they didn't do with Nia on WWE, say. Like, this was kind of felt like the exact right way to do it, because it was all worked around your two Japanese stars working together to take down the bigger, stronger Nyla Rose.
Yeah.
But they also have a rivalry going on, so they do some amazing in-ring work when they have the chance. She comes in and does amazing chucking people around spots. It was brilliant.
It was so
much
fun. I
really, really, really liked this match. And she was dressed as like a sort of bridal scorpion, Nyla Rose, on his wedding day. I loved it.
And the crowd were massively into Yuka Sakazaki. Like, they absolutely loved her. And there was just some really, really fun spots in this. But it was kind of built around how Nyla could have picked up the win at several points during the match, but she chose not to, because she sort of thought to herself, well, I'm amongst these much smaller Joshi girls, so I'm just going to keep killing them and having fun with it, and I'll just win when I fancy
it. Yeah, too cocky.
Got too cocky, which led up to Rio getting the win. I was surprised that there was Rio. But it was the Samoa Joe finish as well, which you know, the surprise roll up, and then Nyla looks angry afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
And then she destroyed both of them after. So she tried to attack. She attacked Rio, and then Yuka made the save. But there's no friendships between them.
Yeah, so she pushes her down as she like tries to help her up. She pushes Yuka down. And Yuka does the most amazing impression of Puss in Boots from Shrek 2 that I've ever seen. Just the bit where he's got the...
Yeah.
She's got, like, yeah, kitty cat eyes.
It was an amazing spot as well where Rio did a crossbody onto Nyla and Nyla caught her, which you're like, yeah, I mean, it's a fairly standard spot. And then Yuka dives as well and Nyla just catches her with ease.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa, yeah, that's pretty cool.
There was a bit where she just did this sort of crazy suplex onto the ropes and then did a diving knee from the turnbuckle.
Oh,
that was just nuts.
Absolutely. It was really, really good. Very much enjoyed that. Kip Sabian came out to join the commentary team because he's facing the winner of the next match, which was a Fatal 4-Way. I really enjoyed this as well. MJF versus Jimmy Havoc versus Hangman Page versus Jungle Boy. I thought this was actually really, really great.
Mm-hmm. I love MJF.
I think
he's so good. I just think his character's amazing.
Luke Owen's number one fan.
And it wasn't you, fortunately, but I love that when someone said, yeah, just finish interviewing MJF, he unplugged my mic.
Yeah, that's Sean Ross Sapp.
Yeah, so good.
He was absolutely amazing. Because he's cutting this promo beforehand, and the crowd chanted, you suck. And he just followed it up with, you know the basement of the mother you live in? She swallows. Very good. Shut down that chant.
He had good descriptions of all of his opponents. He said, like, a knockoff Tarzan, a 65-year-old man still in his goth phase, and Seabiscuit.
he's just really
fun. Oh, yeah. I know we're at a gaming convention. I used to love video games till I lost my virginity.
Very good stuff. And then Jungle Boy comes out and described as coming to the ring riding Luchasaurus. This is a wonderful tag team.
He had to like hang down off him to go through the tunnels. So he had to pop up after he got through the tunnel.
What a wonderful partnership this is. And this is also where we got JR burying Hangman Page for not being a fake weight.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Hangman and Jungle Boy worked really, really well together in this. Actually, all four men got their moments to shine. The Brit that we are and as a big fan, it was lovely seeing Havoc getting a time to shine and get some moments in there, hitting the Acid Rainmaker. I thought he actually was really, really good.
Yeah, I really like Jimmy. I think he's got like just an interesting style because he obviously positions himself to not be the sort of technical wrestler, but he's just got like just little bits where he was doing a couple of like forearms in the corner and he just does this little trip. And then does a running slide. It's like all that kind of stuff I just really, really like about him.
Yeah. And an amazing spot as well where, Jungle Boy did this hanging cannonball moonsault. And you're like, well, those three words don't really go together. And you're like, no, they don't. And the move is bonkers. Like, it looks like it doesn't work, but works incredible at the same time. Really bizarre.
It's a parkour flip, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I just wrote down what happened. What just happened? And they do this Tower of Doom spot with Hangman, Havoc, and Jungle Boy. But rather than MGF get involved, they just did the Tower of Doom into him.
Yeah.
Because he runs into the ring and then he goes, no! They all just collapsed on top of him. That was really funny stuff. And then at the end, Havoc here, Paige hit the Deadeye on Havoc to get the win. And Saban, and I love this as well, because Kip Saban was actually quite good on commentary. He was putting over Jimmy very much during the match as well, as a fellow Brit. But he had a great reason to be happy that Paige won. Because he said, I mean, I'm facing him at Fight for the Fallen. I'm facing off against one of the number one contenders to the title.
Mm-hmm.
If I can win, that puts me into that conversation as well.
Yeah, it was really clever by Kip.
Really, really clever. Like that a lot.
Yeah, I like the finish of this as well. I like the fact that they're also slow building a Hangman MJF feud.
Yes.
And it's, you know, the finale of the match is that Hangman hits the buckshot lariat, but MJF ducks it and Jimmy eats it. And then he hits the Deadeye, and then that's the finish.
Yeah,
it's just a really clever like little bit of stuff. There was also an amazing MJF character moment that was played off a couple of times in it, where MJF is outside the ring. Jungle Boy is pinned by Hangman, and he just puts Jungle Boy's foot on the ropes and just backs off from the ring and is just smiling and going like,
Match
what are you
going to
do? But then there's a point where he has a roll up on Hangman as well, and he's got his feet on the ropes, and Jungle Boy knocks him off.
Yeah,
to break the pin up. It's just a nice little callback of like dishonor and honor. Like
it's good stuff. I really really like this, and as you say, like, because it's setting up sort of kind of teasing this Hangman versus MJF thing, and like JR was saying, like, you know, this is kind of the future of this company, is these two young kids, and that was really really awesome. But as I said at the start, I really liked all the stuff between Hangman and Jungle Boy.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a moment during the six man, which we'll get into in a minute, where it was Kenny and Penta. And I'm like, there's a lot of times that this company so far has been putting these two people together, maybe in tag matches or whatnot. And now I go, oh, I want to see them.
Yeah.
I want to see them have a singles feud. Because I loved Kenny and Penta's match at All In last year. And I would love to see them have a series of matches in our AEW. I think that'd be amazing.
I think it'd be the good a smart breakout. And I think like now the inclusion of like Laredo Kid and stuff, you could splinter Phoenix and him off as a tag team and do something with that, and then move Penta up into sort of a single star.
Yeah, and then possibly move Penta back and move Phoenix into that singles role as well. And
yeah, I think that's the thing, is as long as you've got enough guys, you can keep rotating one person from that group to be your main eventer.
Yeah, and it's the same thing you can do that with SCU, you can do it with the Bucks, because the Bucks are very good singles wrestlers as well.
Yeah.
And it's when we were talking about Cody and Dustin, like, what an incredible singles match they were. But now that they've formed a tag team, I'm like, well, now I want to see them face everyone.
Yeah.
Like, now I'm interested in seeing Cody having singles feuds with people, but I'm also really interested in seeing Cody and Dustin having matches with the Lucha Brothers and SCU.
I think as long as they keep the matchups fresh, I think that will be the thing that will differentiate you the most from WWE would be to just have fresh matches.
Fresh matchups. Then we've got Cody and Darby Allin, which we talked about at the start of the show.
Fantastic
stuff. And then we got the match of the night for me, which was the six-man between the Lucha Brothers and Laredo Kid versus the Elite. JR, and I was Scooby-Doo what was going on with this entrance for the Elite. And he didn't have a blues clue what was going on. It was actually quite funny.
It was really funny. I loved the entrance as well. I thought it was wicked. I just thought the Bucks coming out as Ryu and Ken.
Yeah.
And then the lights go.
Ryu and Ken, Golden Boy.
Yeah, and then you get the full lights off.
Yeah.
Demon graphics.
So it felt like... Nick and Matt come out as Ryu and Ken with like Street Fighter music playing, and then it looks like a fan runs out onto the stage to celebrate with them, and they're like, "Yeah, what's this?" Lights go out, and as I said, then you get the graphics for like the, and I was sort of written here, Omega Akuma'd him to death,
and Omega's just stood there with the back tattoo,
and everything. He's got the red hair as well. It was funny when I saw the someone had sent me an image, I saw an image of this on Twitter yesterday. And it was taken from the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
So I just saw the Young Bucks, I could clearly tell the Young Bucks, celebrating with a guy with red hair. And I was like, oh man, Kenny couldn't make the show, so they had to get Okada in instead. Because he ran Okada and had red hair for a little bit. I was like, Okada's dyed his hair again, and he's brought him back. But no, it was just Omega. But yeah, he dyed his hair to look like Akuma. And the Elite got Justin Roberts to, before the match start, to announce it as round one. Fight.
Loved it.
Good stuff. Good right crowd to do it in front of as well. You couldn't do this in front of the Fight for the Fallen or All Out crowd, or even the Double or Nothing crowd. It was like this specific, where you've got a real gaming/wrestling audience there. It's the perfect place to do it.
Well, yeah, and it ties into the sort of passion project angle they've been doing with it, where it's like, this is something Kenny wanted to do specifically as
well. Kenny's
like,
very big with CEI.
Yeah, exactly.
He got New Japan over last year to do some stuff with them, which actually was sort of like the Jabali stuff started last year. This was just like, the crowd was so into this match.
There was too much happening. I couldn't physically write it down fast enough.
I know, and I was trying to eat at the same time as well.
What are the spots?
I'm trying to eat a falafel wrap and I keep putting it down to make a note. Putting it down, and I was like,
I
can't do both of these things.
Yeah.
It was so much. In the end, I actually just stopped taking notes and I just watched the match, and I just absolutely loved it. Perhaps my favorite spot of this is when they all did the Hadoukens.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Because you had Laredo Kid and the Lucha Brothers started to charge them, and they just sort of power up and just Hadouken them, and they just do these big old crazy bumps. Very, very fun moment. And it was like JR, he didn't know what a Street Fighter was. He might have seen the movie at some point, but so you had Golden Boy and Excalibur just sort of like, every now and again, just being like, that's a reference to a video game, JR.
Oh, okay.
I'm with you now. I've written here, Laredo Kid tries a dive, after loads of other dives, and Omega killed him with a knee.
Yeah.
He ran forward, and he jumped up, and Laredo Kid lost his head.
He was getting his practice in for later. That was
absolutely.
He was getting it, working out his run-ups and trajectories. That was it.
He just kneed him so hard. I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
And then they set up a spot where the Bucks were going to do a Meltzer driver on the floor, I'd like to add. And Nick slightly misstepped his jump up the ropes. But then Phoenix, who was on the turnbuckle, walks across the ropes, grabs him in a Spanish fly, and does a Spanish fly off the top rope, sort of like in the middle portion, onto Matt Jackson on the outside. Just crazy stuff. It was so good.
There was just a lot of like really clever little bits of chemistry here. There was like just before that crazy V trigger, there was a bit with Laredo Kid. One of the Jacksons, I think it's Matt, he does a huge baseball sliding drop kick, like a wrecking ball drop kick through the ropes, and then goes to skin the cat to bring himself back in. And as he turns upwards, he just eats a drop kick and has to sort of bounce off and flip back over and fall down. It was so cool, these little moments. There was a moment where, to stop the pin being broken up, Penta just hits a destroyer.
A Canadian destroyer.
Yeah, just goes, I'm going to stop that being dumb.
And it
Omega still kicks out, and it's like, that didn't help.
Yeah, he did that in Impact as well, and it was the Lucha Brothers versus LAX.
The Step Over one.
It was actually one of my favourite feuds of the year.
Yeah, that was far. Incredible.
It was so, so amazing. And yeah, I love Pentagon Jr. He's one of my favourite wrestlers in the world. I think he's so, incredible. So good.
I think
and
he's very versatile.
Yeah,
he really can have this match, but he can also have the Sami Callihan match.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that Sami Callihan match is so good. And I felt like they were sort of like teasing, and they were kind of setting up, down the line we could get an Omega versus Pentagon Jr. feud, which I'm chef's kiss.
So there was an amazing bit where Kenny kept teasing the dive as well, and I think he hit it eventually, but it doesn't even matter because there's a point where he goes for this huge sprinting dive and Penta slides into the ring and just stops him.
Yeah.
And takes his glove off.
Takes the glove off to do the zero meters.
Yeah, and it but like just it's
I don't say that right.
Just that he's meow 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 meow. Yeah. He takes the glove off to do the
zero
meow meow.
Zero meow meow.
Zero meow meows and then calls him a B.
He had some choice words.
He had some choice words for him and then does zero meow in his face. It's such a cool moment.
Zero meonies. They announced that after the match was done that 80 Fighter Fest is officially done now. Mm-hmm. Officially, this show has ended. What happens next is not sanctioned by AEW, so you can watch it if you want.
This was, though.
So you can watch it if you want. But, well, I suppose that wasn't really sanctioned by AEW. No. That was Sean Spears acting of his own accord in storyline.
I guess so.
In kayfabe. And, so I thought it was actually a really awesome presentation.
Mm-hmm.
It almost felt a bit like at MediaCon last year when Impact had Jimmy Havoc versus Sami Callihan as the main event. Because
they had some very similar echoes in this match, actually.
I thought the same thing, actually. And it was... They were announcing like throughout the night that is going to be our main event. It is not going to be for kids. So if you want to watch, you can watch the rest of the show now. But then a very different match is going to happen.
And we're going to give you plenty of warning.
Plenty of warning, so you can get out of here. I loved this presentation because then all of a sudden an unsanctioned match makes sense.
Yeah.
And thumbs up to that.
Well, the idea that you want to be like these two guys wanted to do this as a concept. I love the idea of like we're distancing ourselves from this. We don't want to do that, et cetera, et cetera. However, obviously, like we said, it does set the precedent that like this might be an AEW thing, especially with Jon Moxley as one of your big stars.
Mm.
That if they're not going to do that in TNT going forward, they have to keep this sort of thing special
to pay-per-views only.
But also just like not even every pay-per-view.
No, absolutely not.
You need to build to a Jon Moxley death match now.
Yeah, like, absolutely. Absolutely. There's a lot of benefits to Moxley being in AEW. He's got creative freedom. He feels so rejuvenated. Like, this doesn't feel like the same guy we were seeing earlier on this year. Like, it's a totally different kettle of fish. But really, the big bonus of this is that we get Justin Roberts to say the word John. And Justin Roberts saying the word John.
Yeah.
Moxley. It's, do you know what? If Moxley leaving WWE has just given us that, then that's all I could have asked for.
I mean, he was great here. I love this.
Moxley was... I credit to Janela as well. I thought Janela was really, really great. And this match was very... It was your... I hate to use the word typical death match, but it was... We will do a big spot, then we'll go, we'll get another weapon, and we'll do another spot. Then we'll get some more plunder, we'll do another spot. Mm-hmm. Then we'll get some different plunder, and we'll do another spot over here. It was just, it set out what it wanted to do, and it executed it very, very well.
Yeah, but I think that's the thing, is like, you know, this is Moxley's first sort of return to the thing that he's known for,
mm-hmm.
and the thing that he wanted to do, so it's kind of important to do that now.
So it was actually really nice for him.
John
Water.
I'm fine.
It's because we haven't got Ollie Davis on camera. We need someone that could just cough off mic every now and again. This was like very much spot-based. Very ECW vibe about it as well, because mm-hmm. you had like Janela grabbing a prosthetic leg off someone to use as a weapon. I love Mox's swagger
these days.
I just love the way he just sort of walks around the ring, the way he carries himself. Just feels like a completely different person. They did flip dives and with chairs, mm-hmm. and they did like a seating chair flip dive spot. Mox grabbed a chair with barbed wire wrapped around it that had like bloody napkins on it. And they were like, oh, that's from when he was trying to put the barbed wire on earlier. He was just cutting his hands up
to do it. Freaking gross. Like that bit where he just put that, like that was sort of the opening of violence really for this match, because it was a very standard sort of chuck yourself around the ring bit mm-hmm. before that, and then he gets that chair, and the first thing he does is just put it on him and just step on it.
Stepped on it and then bowed to the crowd.
Yeah.
Which was very, very nice.
Well, yeah, as he got a you sick F chance, and he was just like...
One of my favourite spots of this is where Janela had a table set up outside earlier in the match, and Mox was trying to put him through the table later on. And they sort of got onto the apron to do it. Mm-hmm. But it felt like they're getting on the apron to set up the next spot. But actually, Janela just grabs him. It's just like, we're going through this table, mate.
Yeah.
Just like, I'm going with you, mother effer. And just like drags him down into this table. It was really, really cool.
Barely a Russian leg sweep.
That's it.
Calling it.
Yeah, because Excalibur said, like, side Russian leg sweep. And they were like, no, he dragged him through that table. He's like, you know what? I was actually being very generous when I said it was a Russian leg sweep.
And they said, like, Janela probably got the worst of that because he... Bumped his head on the thing. I mean, it was inventive violence, wasn't it?
Inventive violence. And they had a spot where Moxley was on two tables and Janela climbed up a big ladder and did a big elbow drop through the two things.
Which looked awful.
They brought out a board that was covered in barbed wire as well, so Moxley could get thrown into that. And then he had the board set up on the outside, and Janela crashed through that as well.
That was the worst one. Got stuck
in it a little bit.
Yeah, because Moxley was sort of like a Death Valley fireman's carry takeover type thing. And yeah, Moxley kind of got stuck, but Janela just grabbed his foot and just rolled him out, but threw more of the barbed wire.
Yeah.
And then when Janela was in there, nobody was helping him.
Nope, absolutely not.
Of his own steam, he had to just be like, bonk, bonk, bonk.
And then... Moxley grabbed a bag. There's no fight stick buttons in this one, folks, and it's tacks, and he takes off Joey's boots and hits sort of like a exploder front suplex into the tacks.
His X-plex thing.
His X-plex thing, and then finally drops the feet into the tacks as well for that spot.
That's horrible.
And you just had Janela flip him off, and he got given his the DDT, which is not the Dirty D's, and it's got a different name in New Japan as well, but it's the Paradigm Shift. Mm-hmm. In AEW, that's the win. And
the Death Rider in Japan.
It's one of the things that people have noticed about Moxley since leaving is that his Dirty Deeds is actually a good move now.
Yeah.
Because like previously people would just fall down onto their knees and you take the move. Now it feels like people are just flying up in the air to make this move look like $1 million.
Well, people are selling it in that sort of, I think in that same way that like Kenny Omega takes a code breaker kind of vibe. It's, I think, just people who've worked in Japan just have a different way of taking things, and WWE's sort of safety first style doesn't necessarily make certain moves look as cool as they could look.
Yeah, it's like when RVD used to take the RKO and he would essentially just lawn dart himself into the world.
Yeah.
Instead just go,
yeah, exactly. And I think that, but he's also lifting them now as well into it. So like he hits one before, just like as part of a comeback, he just pops up and just hits one. But it's just a DDT, they call it. They don't call it the Paradigm Shift.
Yeah.
So,
after the match, he's celebrating, Moxley, that is. And then Omega runs down and absolutely wallops him with a V-trigger.
Just canes him.
Oh, and then he does like a springboard stomp onto Mox between the table shards. And then they fight up towards the... They had a band, like, they had a kit set up for a band that never showed up because of tying into the Fyre Fest.
Blink-182.
Was it actually Blink-182?
It was meant to be Blink-182.
Oh, I see. I missed that bit.
There was a bit where it's... what's his face? What is his name? Can't remember. One of their mates. And he's saying, the band's left. Can't be. But I think they've been tweeting, like, Mark Hoppus about it, from what I've seen.
Are they still going?
Yeah.
Really?
Well, it's not Tom DeLonge anymore. It's now the singer from Alkaline Trio.
Really?
In 182, yeah.
Well, more you know. Then Omega, like, it looked like it was all over, and the referees are carrying Moxley up, and then Moxley shoves off the referees, and Omega runs out and hits him with a trash can again, and hits his own double-arm DDT onto the trash can. But the closing image is Mox smiling.
Yeah.
It's Mox enjoying it. He got exactly what he wanted from Kenny Omega.
He wants to bring out the negative version of Kenny Omega.
And so they're now going to have a match at All Out.
Yes.
Which is like, so that's one of the two matches they've got announced thus far. Moxley and Omega and Jericho Page for the title. And it's sold out. And it had a massive amount of demand, more demand than any WrestleMania has ever had. So... things appear to be going quite well for All Elite Wrestling, one might argue. And I thought that was a terrific show.
It was really fun. I think there were a couple of weak points, and they were mostly on the pre-show, which is kind of, you know, you could argue that's where you want them to be.
Yeah.
Because it's not the bit that people have paid for. But I also think there should be something to make people want to buy the thing in the first place.
Yeah. The whole point of it.
Yeah, but all in all, an incredible show. I think there's some, like, issues, again, with the booking of, like, your unsanctioned matches and your chair shots and all that kind of stuff. Like, if that's not what you're going to do going forward, maybe you shouldn't be telling people that's kind of what you're doing now. I don't know. I just think you might come a cropper when you get to TNT and it's a very watered-down version because it's the televised version of AEW. So maybe you should work out what the ratings board are going to want you to do before you get on telly and start doing it now.
Well, it'll be very interesting to see where we go from here, but I thought it was a thumbs-up show.
Oh, yeah,
really,
fantastic.
Really, really enjoyed it. Chopper P. Quinnell, what are people saying up in the chats?
So, we have got James Plays Games comes in and says, I love Fyre Fest. It built storylines well and left me wanting more. All the wrestlers were presented like stars, even those who lost.
Sorry, I just clipped my microphone a little bit there. But yes, that was, I completely agree with you on that one. I thought it was, again, all these people that won are the people that are getting big matches at, like, the next shows or the shows that are coming after that. So I actually think it makes people feel like stars.
I don't think anyone on the main card came out of it looking bad.
Absolutely not.
At all.
Joey Janela certainly didn't.
Yeah.
Darby Allin certainly didn't.
Yeah, I mean, Joey Janela looked bad in the fact that he was cut open.
Yeah.
But other than that,
I think
that's the thing, is that everyone actually came out of this feeling important and like a star, and it was just star-making potential across the board.
Absolutely, yeah. Got to agree.
Jobber JJ, 496, Ollie Davis, number one fan, says, with four executives and a billionaire, what is AEW's product? Are they confused, or is this and next pay-per-views mean nothing besides wins and losses? So I think he's like, there doesn't seem to be any consistency between Double or Nothing and this, I think is what he's getting at.
Is there not?
I don't know.
I thought there was.
Yeah.
I thought they were building from things that happened at Double or Nothing into this show, and they were talking about the wins that happened at Double or Nothing to build into this and sort of gain momentum. Darby Allin was saying that he wants to kind of make Cody's record 1-1. I thought it was a lot of carry-on. I thought it was some good synergy between the two.
Yeah, I think there was a lot of, like, they played into a lot of little feuds, and they're obviously building stuff in the only way they can do it at the moment, online. So... and via Twitter, I guess, like, bigger than the YouTube channel stuff. So, yeah, I felt like this was... everything kind of made sense here.
Yeah, I agree.
Kratos' Forgotten Son comes in and says...
Patreon Pledgehammer.
Yeah. It says, I'm a week late, but welcome back, Luke. Darby's bump was also insane and looked very convincing.
Oof, I don't like that bump at all, mate. Yeah, absolutely not.
I don't know how he managed to take
it. It winded me.
Yeah. I don't know how he did it.
Oh, no, absolutely
He just maintained
not.
All of his momentum. It was like... the alien getting sucked out at the end of
the end Alien Resurrection.
Spoilers for Alien Resurrection. a film that came out in 1997. There was a crazy, crazy spot. Crazy, crazy spot. But I'm sure Darby knows what he's doing. I'm sure he does.
Question mark?
Question mark. But also,
all those years of skateboarding have trained him well.
Suppose, yeah. Like, I mean, that's Tony Hawk could have been a great wrestler if he'd given it a shot. And thank you for welcoming me back. It's lovely to be back.
Darby Allin's 23. He'll be fine. 22. Yeah. He's fine. Whatever he is. He's young. KJ comes in and says, as Lever Bates was walking down the ramp, did anyone hear a guy shout, this gimmick sucks? Yes. I agree with him.
Yeah. I think that's the point, though.
Yeah.
It's supposed to suck.
Yeah, hopefully.
But fingers that crossed. Doesn't mean it's good.
Mm, indeed. Lincoln Jackdonme? Sorry, I forgot your name wrong there. Quoting something or someone, saying, if there's pilot error, there's pilot error. If so, then why hasn't Vince contacted ground control yet? Also, please don't compare Benoit to Cody.
I didn't compare Benoit to Cody.
I know you didn't.
I just said that we've got to look at this in the post-Benoit world.
Indeed.
Yeah. Benoit is the finale of taking too many shots to the head.
Yes, he should have been the bit of punctuation, the full stop at the end of that.
Yeah.
That's what all the comments are later on. That's going to be a minefield to get through. Crikey. Anyway, what was the question?
Why hasn't Vince phoned ground control?
Sure. If there's pilot error, there's pilot error. In quotation marks.
Yeah, it was the Tony Khan.
The Tony Khan thing. So if so, why hasn't Vince contacted ground control yet?
He did. It's called Eric Bischoff.
Hey, all.
He'll save Raw.
Ground control.
Actually, SmackDown, isn't he? Mm-hmm.
Timothy Jones.
Eric Bischoff.
Timothy Jones comes in and says, decent pay-per-view. I see how great Double or Nothing and All In was, but I think this might be the constant product we get from AEW when it hits TV. It was okay, but not amazing. What do you guys think? Well, I've already kind of said what you guys think. But...
I really liked it. I thought it was a really, really fun show.
Yeah.
Yeah, really liked it.
Cool. Ice5150 says, Nick Jackson said that the chair was gimmicked.
Yeah, that's what we were talking about at the start of the show. So if you came in a bit late, we did talk about how Nick and Tony Khan said that the chair was supposed to be gimmicked. Even if it was supposed to be gimmicked, I still wouldn't have done the shot, that spot the way that they did it.
Use a dummy chair, I think, is probably the better than gimmicking a regular chair.
Yeah.
Use an actual fake chair.
I wouldn't have done it because, for exact reasons like this, there's always room for it to go wrong.
Yeah.
And, you know, they have doctors in place.
If you gimmick the wrong bit.
So. Give me the wrong bit. And they said that the doctors were in place, but things can go wrong. I remember it's the ECW One Night Stand, the first one they did, the 2005 show. There's a spot where they go through a table, and just part of the table just sort of, like, sticks up. Mm. And I'm thinking, like, someone could easily just puncture something on that.
Yeah,
and if you puncture something on that, that could be very, very dangerous.
Yeah.
Probably don't do that.
Yeah, especially since they'll probably try and drag you up within seconds. Yeah. You might be like...
Exactly.
Kratos' Forgotten Son comes back in again and says, Darby reminded me of a member of Raven's Flock stable in WCW, which is very cool.
Yeah, he's not that cool though, is he?
Not Raven cool.
Not Raven's Flock cool. Oh my god.
Project Epic comes in and says, should people reserve their judgment until we find out exactly what went wrong with the gimmick chair, or is it unacceptable, period?
No, you're right, absolutely, which is why we've not really sort of, we've said our piece, but I'm certainly not passing judgment on the company for it. I personally wouldn't have done the spot. I would have done it a different way. I think you still would have been able to continue the storyline between Spears and Cody without having to gimmick a chair and do this bit.
Well, because also, like, I think even if it worked, you would still have to explain
that
at some point that it's gimmicked, because you don't want to be Cody Rhodes taking an unprotected chair shot, knowing therefore that loads of other amateur wrestlers around the country are probably just going to do that now, thinking Cody Rhodes did that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, exactly,
You know,
they're back. Chair shots are fine, and you
would have to, you know, that you are an example to the younger generation of wrestlers coming up, and they are going to copy things that you do. So, you know, you want to make sure that everything you're doing is explained and safe. So if it went fine and it was safe, you're going to have to say it was gimmicked.
Yeah.
And that kind of defeats the point of doing it in the first place, to me, anyway. Yeah. Like, to break kayfabe outside of it and go, yeah, actually, it was gimmicked.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you've always got to explain your position, which is never good.
Yeah.
John Marth comes in and says, just got off the phone with the PM of Ireland. I don't think that's the thing that exists. He's granted permission for Pete to use Chop of the Morning to you.
Chop of the Morning
no,
to you.
Still not happening. Definitely not. Raheel Prasad comes in and says, New Zealand for the win. Sure. Yeah, why not? Ed donated in New Zealand dollars, so I would assume they're from New Zealand. Just putting two and two together here, but, you know.
Detective Pikachu.
Stop it. Kratos' Forgotten Son comes in again.
Hey, Christos, mate.
And says, forgot to say hi to Pete and Laurie earlier as well. Great job as always, mates. Unrelated, but can we get some Bloodstained Ritual of the Night PS4 gameplay on Screenstalker soon? Thanks again.
Yes, please.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yes, please. Yes, please.
Yeah, if Luke wants to do it, we'll do it.
Yes, please.
Yeah, let's do that. Justin Roderick comes in
the
and says...
The reviews were surprisingly good for that game.
Well, of course it was.
Looks great. There were really bad reviews of it from conventions, so they were like, we're fixing it all, and it could have gone either way.
Yeah. I'm unsurprised.
Justin Roderick says, been waiting on your opinions about the chair shot since Cody hit the mat. I hope this doesn't hinder AEW anymore.
I don't think it will do. I really don't. And, like, to be honest, we live in a 24-hour news cycle. This will be old news by Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
Just look at last week. Last week is a perfect example of how the Twitter and social media and the way that news works nowadays can change things. Pete and I recorded our episode on Wednesday because we had to, because of things were, like, the schedule sort of fell out of whack and we had sort of business away days and stuff. So we did a Wednesday news episode on the Seth Will stuff, thinking that's the biggest news story of the week. There'll be nothing bigger than this. At least we hope there isn't. Boom, the very next day, the Bischoff-Heyman thing happened.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, come Friday, no one's talking about Seth Rollins anymore.
No.
Despite the fact that that was the biggest story at the start of the week.
Mm-hmm.
Come Thursday, something else will have happened, and no one will be talking about this moment.
You've got 3 hours of Raw to have nonsense shenanigans.
WWE have got 6 whole hours of TV to create.
You
something.
Just wait.
So, it won't hinder them whatsoever. People won't be talking about this by next week.
Well, like 2 weeks' time, they get to clean slate it, do the next thing.
Show, yeah.
So it'll be
exactly.
Fine.
Asa Dunn comes in and says, I'm feeling 2000 WCW vibes, or at least late 90s.
I'm assuming with WWE. Certainly not with AEW.
Maybe with AEW, I don't know.
I think they've got a very WCW-inspired presentation. I think, like, they've got old-schooly vibes, but...
Yeah, I can hear that, yeah.
Yeah, but the wrestling is very current.
Like, also, 1999 WCW and 2000 WCW had horrific booking week in and week out. As when people say, like, oh, WWE feels like WCW. It's like, absolutely it doesn't.
No.
Like, the attendance certainly does, because no one's going to the shows anymore. But those shows, like 1999, 2000 WCW, are just, like, abhorrently bad. Where you just, like, every match is like, what, why, what is this? Whereas, like, at least with Raw, I'm just apathetic to it.
Mm.
It's just like, this is bad. But it's
you know why it's happening.
I don't know, at least I know why it's happening. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No one, and I'm going to use this to my dying day, no one, as of yet on Raw, has been counted out in a hardcore match where they spilled out backstage. Once that happens, then we can say it has become 1999 WCW.
Great way to restart a match and avoid wrestling in the ad breaks is to count someone out in a hardcore match and then go, oh, wait, no count outs, restart the match.
Oops, but my bad.
Now we can have loads of referee mistakes as a thing, too.
SpaghettiOs. Yeah. Oh, yeah, ref mistakes. That's the way to do this.
And they have already had a rope break in a cage match, so, you know, we're getting there.
We're on our way.
Rules.
What are rules? Randy, that's
Brock
the number
Lesnar
one
the money
fan.
In the bank, and that's still not been explained.
We had a no contest in the Hell in a Cell last year.
So I think you've now proved the opposite point that
making. No, because those are bad, but they are nowhere near as stupid as a Falls Count Anywhere match when someone got counted out.
You've got 10 seconds.
Match could have ended on the moon. They can't get counted out.
Randy, that's the number one fan.
Tomo
says, I enjoyed the show so much that I woke up everyone in my house. Keep up the good work, fellas.
Cheers. I'm assuming you're talking about Fyterfest, not this show.
Yes, Fyterfest.
Mm-hmm.
Might be enjoying the show that much, though.
Yeah, that's our aim.
To annoy your family members.
Yeah.
Emilio Rivas, no message, but donation nonetheless.
Thank you very much.
Kratos' Forgotten Son.
Hey,
comes
Kratos,
in again.
Mate.
He says, one last message for today. I bet you there's going to be another one later. One last message for
one
today.
One more thing.
Jackie Chan's uncle reference from Jackie Chan Adventures.
That's because they're Columbo.
Nice ECW Raven Tommy Dreamer reference in the title there. Huge old school fan here. Thanks again.
Yeah, that chair shot heard around the world. Crikey. That was a chair shot heard around the
that
world.
That was. This one is...
Swung for the fences.
Close.
Actually, but Pete, on that, you in the ECW One Night Stand 2006 review, you in particular were not a fan of the violence on show.
No, not at all. No, I was not a fan. Basically because I can't really remember wrestling that much from a pre-Benoit period. Like, the vast majority of my wrestling memory comes from post-Benoit, and I know what happens when people have brain trauma. And I don't like people getting hit in the head, pretty much. And then there was just some horrible stuff with Terry Funk, and he's 61, and Mick Foley has barbed wire scraping across his face, and I'm like, this isn't enjoyable to watch. If it's like a fun spot, like Moxley...
He's only 4 years from retirement.
Yeah, I know. Like, and if...
Four matches from retirement.
But like,
four retirement matches from retirement.
So like, Moxley getting Death Valley Driver'd into a table with barbed wire on it, that's like a high spot. That's like an, ooh, that's not fun to watch. When you're literally watching someone just mutilate someone with some barbed wire, I'm like, this isn't enjoyable anymore. Like, nah, I'm past that.
You're done.
Yeah, I'm done. Anyway.
I want to do a live stream on ScreenStalk where we just make Chopper watch all of the Saw films back to back.
He was quite
no.
bad. It's quite bad just playing Resident
Evil.
No, I think it'd be great.
Yeah.
Well,
it'll be
it.
Awful. It'll be awful.
I'll speak to Ollie about it.
Yeah, let's not do that. Tim Arndt comes in and says, MJF gets the kind of heat that WWE thinks that Baron Corbin gets.
His heat continues over into matches.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a big fan of MJF. He's a big fan of me.
He's just so good at like what he's doing.
Yeah.
He's doing...
He gets his character.
Yeah, he really, really does.
He's great.
Nate Drop Surname says, that one cannonball move put Jungle Boy over. There were a ton of people in my section who said they didn't like him and then were chanting for him afterwards.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's all it takes. That's all it takes, man.
Yep.
Jungle Boy's cool.
Yeah, I also like the bit where Luchasaurus saves him from falling off the apron.
Yeah.
And he just wobbles back and is back up.
Forever314 says, I really like this show, but maybe we shouldn't be smashing metal objects into each other's skulls. Anyway, hope you all have a lovely day.
Well, we hope you have a lovely day as well. And you're right.
Yeah. Jonathan Berube says, I knew nothing of Laredo Kid before this match, but good God, this kid is a star in the making. Love you guys, keep up the great work.
Love you, thank you very much, my friend. But yeah, Laredo Kid's very cool.
Yeah,
yeah,
really, really good.
Yeah, yeah, good stuff. That's six, man. That went right into my my Word doc of best matches of the year.
Mm.
Really, really
like. Again, it's again that thing of like the unknown quantity for the majority of the fans. There gets a lot of time, gets really well put over. Yeah, he takes the pinfall, but he's the youngest guy in the match. You know, the freshest name in the match. So, it's Kenny Omega. So
yeah,
you know,
much.
What do you?
Very good. Liked it.
Cool. We've got 10 more super chats to go.
Cool.
So, Tim Arndt comes in again and says, I love the 6-man tag, but why wasn't it a tornado tag match? I feel like I'm the only person in the world who was constantly taken out of the match because the ref wasn't trying to restore order.
And that was you and JR. JR was also taken out of the match.
I think
when the
rules do exist for it, I guess like it does feel a bit silly to have arbitrary tags. I always find those like the 3-corner tag matches where only 2 people can be in at once and it's all sneaky tags. Like, that is a cool spot sometimes with, like, blind tags mm-hmm. and things, but half the time it's just confusing.
Yeah.
I'm just going, who's doing the pin?
Who's in now?
Who's doing a pin now?
Yeah, I think a lot of times with these matches, after a while, I'm just like, Legal Man Syndrome doesn't bother me as much as it bothers a lot of people. But I can totally see why it would bother people because it is like, what are the rules?
Well, I think because sometimes...
What's the point of having rules if you're not going to follow them?
I think also because sometimes you just have that break of like, you don't really, you can't actually judge the jeopardy that someone's in because you don't know who's going to get the pin. Like, you know, it might be someone in the 2 people stood in the ring having a fight and neither of them is the legal man. So it's like, okay, well, this doesn't...
No,
this is irrelevant
yeah.
because neither of them are going to get pinned now. So they're just hurting each other for no reason.
Well, it helps the tag partners who are legal.
Who are on the floor. Like,
exactly.
That's what I do.
And eventually they'll get back up.
Just hide your legal man for a bit. It's the best thing to do.
Yeah, maybe.
We've got FF18Cloud says, I guess... Final Fantasy 18 card? I don't know. About CEO and AEW, this was a win for AEW to get CEO behind them. They used the ring and AEW stuff for GFs for a few games with 100,000 plus viewers per game.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
So good stuff for
good
AEW.
Stuff. Yeah.
Antonio Pierce, no message, but a donation nonetheless.
Thank you.
Nate Drop Surname says, yay, Chopper Peter's here, number one fan. Thank you.
Hey.
Spike Bite Gaming?
Mm.
Sure. My fave combo, Chopper and Laurie.
Oh, burn.
It's a bit harsh, isn't it?
Nah, it's fine.
The correct answer.
It is
well,
good.
Well.
It's a good partnership, though.
It's decent. It's all right. It's in my top three.
It's the bring your son to work team.
I made him in a test tube.
I know. You're like Dr. Abe Kravitz in that South Park song.
Yeah. Jobber JJ comes in again to say, I was trying to say that will these pay-per-views mean something to AEW's TV product? I did see that Double or Nothing and Fyter Fest are building plots. So I was wrong earlier. He's saying, will these shows matter when AEW's weekly TV rolls around?
Such an interesting question. It's kind of what we were talking about earlier. It's like, is this the product that we're going to be presenting on TV? Or is it going to be very different? Because the way that Tony Khan and everyone was talking about it prior to the TV deal and everything like that, it's a very sports-centric product.
Yeah.
And thus far in these two shows, it hasn't felt exactly sports-centric. No. So, yeah, it'd be very interesting. I think the wins and losses will certainly play into TV, but whether or not the format and sort of style of presentation follows along with it, I think that remains to be seen.
Yeah, because it'd be interesting to see when they start to bleed in more of the promo packages. Like, are they going to do backstage stuff as well? Because we don't really get a lot of that in... You know, there was little bits of that in the sort of fake Fyre Festival documentary stuff, but there wasn't, you know, there wasn't anything else in this show that was like just someone backstage, apart from the one bit of Brandy watching a match.
Yeah,
and they were like, oh, she's watching a TV the right way around.
Yeah, but and to your point, they didn't have like Kenny Omega sort of going backstage trying to like book Blink 182 and things like that. They didn't actually have that in the main show. That was all just for the buy-in pre-show stuff. So yeah, so I think that the wins and losses will certainly play into TV as from now, but I'm not sure about the presentation.
Yeah.
Nate Drop Surname again says, perfect match to introduce the time limit. So the one that had the time limit
Darby
rule.
Allen. Oh, right, okay, Cody, right, okay.
You're saying it's the perfect match to introduce the time limit rule to fans that might not be familiar with.
Yeah, cool.
I assume.
Yeah.
TJ Ridgway says, John's smile at the end makes me say F. Rollins.
I'll be honest, Rollins did not come off well in that interview. Mm. He really didn't.
No. Wasn't great.
Yeah, he kind of missed the point of Moxley's interview, to be honest. I'm not sure if he listened to it.
Yeah, probably not.
He's just on one at the moment, isn't he, about backing where he is. He's like, you know, I'm not wasting my time here.
That Triple H hacked his Twitter.
Maybe. And his brain.
And did the interview for him, yeah.
Yeah. Nate Drop Surname, again, says, watch, Seth is going to stop just short of hitting Corbin in the head with a chair as an answer on Raw.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
It's actually not a bad idea.
Yeah, it's not a bad idea at all, really.
Yeah. And he suddenly has a moment of realization. He's like, oh, I can't do this. This is too much.
Yeah, I'm a hero.
It'd be interesting to see what WWE does, like, if they are going to do an actual answer, like, you know, because obviously everyone's going to view Raw after Fyter Fest as an answer anyway. But it'd be interesting to see if they actually reference it in any subtle ways at all.
Yeah.
Or whether they just crack on with the usual business of putting Baron Corbin in the main event.
Maybe we'll get the return of the electric chair. Oh, remember that gimmick?
I can't. Maybe the whole third hour of Raw will be unsanctioned. They'll turn the lights off and on again.
Well, you've got to hide how no one's there.
Yeah, that's it. That's the best way to do it, turn
exactly,
the lights off.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Empty arena matches.
Rocky Balboa comes in and says, hey, Luke, Laurie, and Pete.
Hey, hey, man.
Hey. And then last two, which came in after I said there was 10 left, Sean Turner comes in and says, Bischoff is on SmackDown. Bailey's thing is getting closer to being real. Vince is getting desperate. Idea, bring Steiner back and make it a moment with Steiner.
Oh, man. Can you imagine if Bailey's thing actually happens?
Imagine.
That actually happens.
I got a tweet today. I think all of us got a tweet today, but I think I was the one that saw it. Someone had tweeted us an idea of a Funko Pop of design of Bailey Sting.
Which
I was a big fan of. I like that a lot.
We've had quite a few people send us like their creator wrestler versions, like with the face paint and the mask. And
amazing.
Yeah. It's very good.
Mm-hmm. I love it. And then last two, because another one just came in. Antonio Pierce says, my message was about the subtle message with Kenny... this is hard to read. With Kenny being Akuma and Mox smiling at the end of the attack, the subtle message that Mox is trying to bring out Omega's dark side for their match.
I don't think the Akuma thing's going to play into anything post
the
fact that it were at CEO.
Was it the Setsu no Hado? Like,
I think
just bringing it out of him.
I think it was just there for a bit of fun. I think actually it was Mox's attack at the end of Double or Nothing made Kenny Omega answer and attack him here, as opposed to the Akuma thing tying into it.
Yeah, but I think it's a nice little, like, the Akuma thing at least ties into it nicely, of like someone who's embraced their sort of dark character. So actually it's could be just a fun bit of extra context.
Yeah.
But I definitely don't think it was the point.
No.
No. I don't think it was the point, but you could also make the argument that it was something similar to, like, Gargano wearing his different attires at various points in the feud, because it displays his character a bit more. Could be something like that. I don't know.
It's definitely something like that.
And then last one, FF18 Cloud comes in again and clarifies what I said earlier. The GFs I was talking about with the CEO thing is Grand Finals, because I'm not a... Apparently, I don't know games, even though I work for a gaming YouTube channel.
Not the FGC.
You've got to know those. You've got to know those shorthands, mate, because the kids haven't got time to type out Grand Finals. You've got to write down girlfriends.
Got to write down girlfriends. Yeah.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.